but usually the new person sees something which is missing there. So I try to have them being able to do something the first day.
Welcome to Scaling Software Teams, a weekly podcast to help software leaders navigate fast growth without losing the magic that made that growth possible. I'm your host, Wes Wenham. Today, we're joined by Radoslav Stankov. Rado is the head of engineering at Product Hunt. Product Hunt is the de facto launching pad for many of the best new products in tech. They were acquired by AngelList in 2016 for $20 million, and they remain one of the most productive teams across all of AngelList. Rado's team has launched an impressive number of new products in the last couple of years, so I really enjoyed this conversation of how you balance new product launches with maintaining existing products. And now, here's my conversation with Rado Stankov. Rado, thank you so much for joining us today on Scaling Software Teams.
Thanks for having me.
So what is single player mode, and why should we optimize for single player mode on our teams?
Yeah, so single player mode is basically one of like enablers for Product and how we structure work. Like the idea of the single player mode is that a developer should be able to execute from start to finish with having the least amount of blockers. Like for me personally, like the thing which I defined as process means automated decisions for trivial questions. And one problem with having like bigger teams is you depend on other people. So like in my opinion, one of the biggest challenges in software engineering is dependencies. And this can be from software dependencies like Node, modules, gems, to like people dependencies of, okay, I cannot execute because I'm waiting for the design, or I cannot implement this feature because the backend is not ready. So what we do, what we say single player mode means like an engineer being able to work on a feature from the database design to deploying it to our servers, to writing the backend, exposing the API, writing the frontend, and adjusting the CSS, like handling everything. Like the goal is to be block as little as possible. Like if a designer misses, if a developer misses a design, maybe just mock up the UI yourself and use some of the components we already have and fix it later. If you don't know how to do something technically, okay, just do like a manageable hack and handle this. If you don't know about some business or product decision, just make the decision, like, and it how much you can screw it up for 1 or 2 days until you get the official one. So that's basically what single player mode is.
So we're reducing dependencies on decisions or technical pieces so that we can move faster and be more productive. That makes sense to me. What are some things you've done to enable better single player mode on your team?
Yeah, so basically what I like to say is like we have the single player mode, which is like the thing which enables the execution of the company. And for single player mode, we have something which I call enablers for single player mode. Like one of the things is best practices. Like the idea there is like you can imagine being in a team and everybody is doing their own stuff and it can get quite messy. So we are very focused of having like a best practices driven approach. Like for example, we have style guides automated. We have automated tests, or every code passes a pull request review. Like we try to not be messy and follow good engineering principles. So that's one of the enablers to not have a mess from a single player mode. The other one is automation. Like everything we can automate, we try to automate it as much as possible. Like automation is a bit tricky because if you automate too early, you are sticking to yourself. But in general, it's good. For example, when you do a deployment, it should just be one command and you deploy, and you shouldn't put much effort into it. The other thing is we follow the Boy Scout rule, or the way I like to present it, pick up the trash line on the floor rule. That is like you're an engineer, you work on something and you see something messy because we have done a transition, because we have done work. And what you do is, okay, let's pick up the trash. Let's just clean up this thing. you shouldn't ask for permission to refactor or to clean up stuff. You should feel that this is your responsibility. In this way, the whole system gets better. And the last two things are the small checkpoints, or which are something like what we do is we do trunk-driven development. Like we basically, we work with branches. Everything which goes to master passes a pull request review. But the idea is every feature is split into deployable parts, and every pull request should be between 1 or 2 days at max. And it should be deployed behind like a feature flag. Like we have a whole tooling and set around that. So basically, if there is mistakes, they're very easily catched in production. And the engineers are like not spending, okay, I'm spending 1 month working on this feature. When I have to integrate it, I have to rebase, I have to ship it. And okay, oh, I shipped it and I didn't thought that I have to do this database migration. And if you do those things in a smaller checkpoints, if you do them every day, and the feature is kind of enabled in production with a feature flag, you have this safety that our big releases, like releases where in other companies, a whole engineering team is gathered around and like ready to shut up the fires. With that, it's like you just go to the admin and click enable to all the feature. And most probably this feature was enabled for a bunch of users beforehand. So there isn't much pressure around it. And if something goes wrong with the feature, you just disable it, fix it, and you have this safety net. And the final part, it's also enabler for some of the other things we do. It's we try to be a bit more data-driven oriented. So we try to not guess what happens, but actually look at metrics. We are not very good yet at that, but we are getting better of how do we collect metrics and how do we handle metrics into our own flow. And basically those is like the things I'm just saying you are is just quotes from I have this document which is called our developer principles, and this is something we keep in our documentation repository, and this is every engineer, like I share this with every engineer.
So here are the five things we do to enable single player mode and data-driven decisions, automation, small chunks, lots of best practices, and I think there was one other one in there that I forgot.
Yeah, the Boy Scout rule.
Boy Scout rule. Yeah, I like those. So if the whole team is following those principles, then it enables people to work without dependencies on each other, or fewer dependencies on each other, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, you always have the dependencies, but they should be the exception, not the rule. And also for enabling the single player mode, everybody should be very comfortable of working. Like usually the fear is something which holds people back. Like I'm like an engineer. Okay, I'm a bit scared to not implement the design as it is, because there is this obvious flow with it when it works with real data. You shouldn't be scared of that. It's your teammates. Everybody wants to do a good job, and you just do this. I'm scared because this is a big feature, and if I deploy it, I'm scared that I'm bringing the whole system down. Okay, how we can split this into chunks and we can validate that each part works, so we don't bring the system down, and stuff like that. Like basically trying to work in this manageable environment. Also, like the other extreme is you are fearless, you are a cowboy, you start shooting features, and everything becomes a mess and nobody wants to work on other people's features because they're a mess. And that's the reason, again, everything passes to practices. Every piece of code should look kind of the same, and so on and so forth.
So one of the key pieces there is breaking things into small enough chunks that you can deploy incrementally. I've seen engineers come from environments where they didn't have that kind of mandate and those principles, struggle to break work down. As a leader, how do you help your team break the work into small enough deployable chunks?
One of the things I do first and foremost is, again, I have this onboarding process and trying to taught them and teach them how that this happens. And also I try to do a bit of retrospective approach. Like, for example, a lot of times, especially the newer engineers tend to always start with bigger chunks because in their head it's the whole thing. And I just let them do it, and then we do a small retros. see how this break, how we can improve that, why is this happening? And I just let them have a bit of time to learn how to split their work into good chunks. Because again, I'm still learning this myself in some ways. And the idea there is, again, creating the safe environment. And yeah, you work on a whole week on this feature, maybe how you could have split it up, why you work a whole week on it. Some of the features, can we get rid of those because it's too big? And again, just asking questions and try to work. And also, since everybody works together, people start like, they're like rocks. Like when you bump them together, they start to follow their own shapes.
So during onboarding, you cover that this is the principle. And then for the first couple of features, maybe they do build it in 1 week or 2 week chunks. And then you go back and use a retro and say, how might we have split into smaller? And that's kind of your tool for getting that learning together rather than saying, no, stop, you can't do that. It's more like, how could we have done this?
Exactly, exactly. And often when we do bigger features, I sit with them and or somebody else on the team and decide, okay, how we are going to architect this. Like we had this big feature we are working on right now. It's something really, like it's a very internal thing, but it's very massive. And okay, how we can make the transition from the new system, old system, how they can work in parallel, how we can deploy it, how we can make the safe things, how we can validate our bets. Like this comes a bit from the data-driven approach, how we can validate that this actually works. And this actually turned the feature around quite a bit. And basically we have a roadmap how every day we ship us very small pieces and they actually kind of validate the feature itself and help us move forward.
You've positioned your team as the MVP factory. What do you mean by that?
The way Product Hunt internally works, we have two types of initiatives internally on the product level. One is improvements to existing properties. Like last quarter, like we work on quarters, like basically Product Hunt, we sit and we plant projects which are taking one quarter. And the projects basically fall into two categories. First category is improvements to existing things. Like for example, last quarter, we put a lot of improvements into our commenting system, added polls to our comments, improved some of the spam detection there. We combined reviews, comments, and overall like improvements on something which already exists. Like you need to do that because again, there is still things you can do there because there is active users, you know what their needs are, and it's kind of easy. The other things are basically, we actually do a lot of those, is I call them MVPs, but it's or moonshot. It's totally new product initiatives. It's things we never had before, and we try them, and we see how they work. This year, we launched our new browser extension. Like, again, it's a totally new initiative. It had accepted the stuff it had before. It has something which is called virtual co-working feature. We launched something called Product Hunt Stories, which is stories about makers, like news article, stories, narrative. We launched something called Founders Club, which is a new subscription service for which bundles features for founders. We are working on a new project which hopefully would be available in a couple of weeks in a beta mode. It's called Your Stack. We already have the Twitter account and all of that, so this is like a big moonshot. And those are projects which, again, we don't have, like they start from kind of zero users, zero stuff. And it's a bit more, the approach there is a bit different from the one which is the improvements part. Like the improvements part, a lot of the traditional software planning systems kind of work well. A lot of data-driven approaches kind of worked well because you already have the data. But when you ship an MVP or a moonshot, it's a very different approach.
You've got zero users. It's tough to get data from zero users.
Yeah, and you have to validate the idea. You have to see how it goes. How do you build it? Where do you... Should I launch it? Should I not launch it? Usually those have bigger releases and stuff like that.
And how do you structure those projects or your team to be well-suited to that kind of MVP moonshot work rather than... You know, I think the traditional agile methods are an awesome fit for that polish, that bit of work where you kind of know what you're doing?
So we are still working on that. Like basically, that's I realized that we work in this way. We did do this for a couple of years now, and I realized this January that, especially when working with the new team members, that we work on this way. And basically, I think the first thing which really helped the team was actually explicitly say that we have those two types of projects and their approaches are different. And yeah, we are a bit flying blind, but we can do some of experiments to validate the project early on. And also, you should try to reuse as much stuff as possible from the previous stuff, because when you launch a new product, you need to make a lot of decisions. And a lot of the stuff we already done already have baked in decisions, which is, okay, validated through the years, they work, you just use those, it makes your work faster.
So kind of like blessed path or golden path for like technical decisions and UI and stuff.
Exactly. Like, for example, we are very pushy into reusable stuff, like even more. Like a lot of organizations, yeah, you code it just as it's needed. For us, it's like, okay, how we can make this more reusable between projects? Because if the MVP fails, it's not a failure, it's a learning. But one thing we try to do from engineering point of view is actually salvage technologies from it. Like, for example, from Founders Club, it's a subscription-based project. And when we are... You have to implement a subscription service, a subscription way for users to subscribe for it, to cancel, to validate, change, like all this work, which is very standard, but it's very needed for this feature. It's not the breadth of the feature, but it's something on the side. So it took us maybe like 2 or 3 extra hours to make this whole pipeline of subscriptions more generic. So in the future, when we add a new subscription service, we can just attach this logic to it and we can reuse the whole funnel. So the next time we have an MVP, we can just reuse the subscription models. Like, for example, when we launched Stories, we had already built commenting system with threads and all of that stuff. We had already have the voting buttons. We had already built a whole feature flagging system. We had already an HTML editor, so you can make the articles building well. And this project contributed improving this editor even more because it needed a lot more other features. And creating this can be reused. When we created the new project, which was the polls for comments, like attaching polls with options to every comment, the way we designed this, yeah, it wasn't the optimal design if you're just going to have this in one place, but we spent like extra time to make this component being able to attach polls to any entity in our systems. And right now, I think 2 places are going to get polls, which is basically almost adding them for free. And you can add them, see how they work, do they work, and if they don't work, just remove them from that new place. And this is how we try to approach that stuff. Engineers, like, I'm kind of exploding that the engineers want to build reusable things. And in a lot of traditional places, making stuff generic, like, it has a cost.
Absolutely.
And when you have this cost in our place, we actually, for us, it's more in the way Product Hunt operates, that's better than if we are just following the traditional path. And that's, again, the context is king. Some things which work in one organization don't work in another, and vice versa.
So where is the boundary for you? So reusability has its limits, right? There's a point where you make something generic and, you know, it's the agony, you aren't going to need it. What are some heuristics you use to decide, hey, we could make this reusable, but we're not going to?
The thing about it, the border here is, again, it's always learning. Sometimes you catch it correctly, sometimes you don't. Usually the approach I'm trying to put on something to be reusable is it an entity? Like, for example, polls, it's something separate. Like, it has a name. This thing has a name. Like, we won't reuse the validation for a post option because it's not a big enough unit. The same thing with like we are using React on the front end, and what I like about React is you think about components. And what we try to do there is, again, how many options this thing would have. If you can make something configurable with one or two options, try to make it a bit of reusable. Sometimes we got overboard in some places, but it's, I think, in a matter of judgment in those situations. Also, the way we are trying to approach problems is to be more about like have this like a very aggressive namespacing and splitting into modules. And modules, when you start separating your system into modules, those modules tend to have interfaces, and this is where you can add the reusability. Like we have a module which is called polls or subscription, or in this case subscriptions. And when this thing has a name, it's a big enough unit so you can actually use it. Again, sometimes we overdo it, but again, it's a balance.
So your heuristic is this a name thing that we think is a big enough top level piece? You're not trying to reuse a lot of utilities and helper and validation. It's like, is this a top level thing that we'll care about? Scaling software teams is brought to you by my startup, Woven. At Woven, we provide world-class developer screening for high-growth teams, but I'm one of the founders, so it's possible that I'm a little biased. Instead of taking it from me, I think you should hear from our customers' candidates. Here's a real quote from a real software engineer about our work simulations and the feedback we deliver. I just completed my Woven assessment, and I had a blast doing it. What a great tool! By far the most fair and effective technical interview experience I've had from the interviewee side of the table. If you want to judge for yourself, we'd be happy to build you a tailored demo that you can play with on your own time. Go to woventeams.com/demo to get started. That's woventeams.com/demo. So as you have kind of this MVP focus, you're launching a lot of new projects. You just listed out 4 new products, which is, you know, more than most teams do in multiple years. When you're hiring for engineers, how do you change your process to get folks that are going to be successful in that, like lots of new product environment?
You mean about how do we onboard them or how do we hire them?
I would like to hear both. Both of those are interesting.
Okay, I'll tell you about the onboarding because I think this is a bit more, I'm feeling a bit better there than the hiring part. Basically, for the onboarding, I have this process of things the engineer should be able to do. Like the goal there is very simple. Like we do a lot of things which are very common between projects, and every engineer has to know the mechanics. Like this is something, in my opinion, a lot of engineers don't focus about. It's the mechanics of the work they do. Because a lot of times, for example, and mechanics one means something simple, like we are using a GraphQL API. And how do you create a mutation? How do you add a new type there? How do you create a form? How do you create a database view? How do you do a big database migration? How all those things are mechanical things, which you're doing over and over and over again. Yeah, we have tools and abstractions for them, but you still have to know what's happening. And if you don't know that, you're wasting a lot of more your energy of how to do those things and not thinking about the business problem. So the way I try to onboard people is, some people say it's aggressive, but everybody who I spoke with, like onboarded, they are quite happy with the approach. It's not like, it doesn't sound so intensive. Like usually I try to have them on the first day to commit code, anything. Most times it's just updating the README with the install instructions of our application, because again, we don't hire a lot and people know how to install the app, but usually the new person sees something which is missing there. So I try to have them being able to do something the first day, like just to set up their environment, so, because their environment should be able to be set up for less than a day. Everything there should be automated. I'm trying to have them on their first week, they should have something user-facing as a feature, and they should present this on our Monday all-hands meeting team call where the whole company is gathered. Like the idea is, it can be a very simple feature. It doesn't need to be something big. It can be, for example, I added a hover state on some button, even like something user facing, but presented to the whole company. So because most probably this is the time this person is being introduced to the team, and it's good that this person gets into the habit. And also we do a lot of demos of the work we do to show to the rest of the team. So in this way, they see something works. During the first couple of weeks, they have daily one-on-ones with me, or hopefully in the future, somebody else as well, where I help them guide the process of what they're doing. So the first couple of weeks, they are assigned to a bit of more maintenance work. So they are just working around different parts of the system. And I have a checklist of things they have to implement. For example, create a React component, create a new page, create a new query, create like basic mechanics. So they actually see how it goes. On my side, I try to monitor what they're struggling with, what questions they ask me, and I keep them in a list. And based on this list, I either improve documentation or improve tooling. So they're actually improving the system as they go. And I'm hoping that after some of the process, like for example, during their first month, they have to remove something from our system. And I want them, like usually this happens around week two. The idea there is you remove something, like you remove a dead piece of code, remove a feature which is not needed. The goal for this is to learn that this is not a secret system. Everything is for grabs. Take it, remove it. We are quite open to refactoring, cleanups. There is like we have recently created a roadmap of things which we want to kill and do this, because a lot of people are scared. When I have been in this situation, I go to this code base, I see this is terrible and it's there, I cannot remove
it. No.
And everybody wants to remove it, but nobody has the guts, and it just piles up and increases the maintenance cost. And by the end of their first month, they have to create something reusable. Like it can be just an utility function. It can be a component in React. It can be a Ruby class. It can be whatever. But they should have to create something that can be used by somebody else, so they get into this mode of like reusability. And this is like around 1 month, 2 month process. And around the third week, I start reducing the calls. And that's basically it. Like, that's how we put the people inside of it. And again, I'm recording, I'm writing in a list of all their questions, the places they're struggling with, showing them what I think they could improve, then also taking their feedback how we can improve. Because a lot of the stuff we have done is organic, and I really like to work with people, especially right now we are hiring a junior person. We are in final phases of that. And I cannot wait for this person to come and start asking questions and be confused about stuff, because their confusion is an opportunity for to improve the whole system.
I love that system. So you start off with, you know, you're going to commit on day one. You're going to a demo on the first week's demo day. You're going to check all of the like really low level tactic things that you need to build high level. And you're working your way up to building all the blocks you need to kind of ship features by yourself. How are you keeping track of a candidate's progress through this? Is this kind of a shared checklist you have, or do you have your own kind of Google Doc somewhere that you're keeping track?
I use the note-taking app Colbert, and I have like a doc for all my teammates. I have their like history, what they work on, because everybody in the team has different strengths and different weaknesses. And I have a list there. Okay, this person is an expert in Elixir. We don't use Elixir right now, but it's good to know, because sometimes we might need something where Elixir would be a very good fit. And I have, this is their first week and they have this checklist. Have they done this? And I'm still like building, okay, what are the common things we do? Like, for example, they should have done an A-B test. But if we don't have an A-B test, they most probably won't do it because we don't have it. Added a feature flag, like basically walk them through the whole everything which is mechanical and has to be done. So I just have a list and I keep progress of that. And by this, I'm also recording, okay, who has worked on what kind of projects. So because I want to switch people between projects, so we share knowledge and people then get bored.
I love that system. Checklists are the most powerful tool in the universe sometimes, especially if they're thoughtfully applied. And you're changing this checklist as every new person, a junior engineer comes in, they teach you something, you add something to the checklist. Is that kind of the vibe I'm getting?
Yeah, exactly. Like I started a bit late, but right now I'm adding a lot of lists and trying to have everything. Like even the act of writing the lists helped me think about it. Like again, making the implicit explicit. And again, I'm changing a lot of things. Like again, I have lists for questions people ask me, and sometimes it's okay. Today, I explain three times how we do email tracking. Why, like it's not that the people are not smart enough. That means something here is very complicated. How we can make it easier? And that's again on my idea of the process, because most of the time I have no idea what we're doing and what I'm doing. And I want to have, okay, let's try this. Let's see what happens and move forward.
My guest today has been Rado Stankov. Rado, thank you for joining us today on Scaling Software Teams.
Thanks. This was fun.
Thanks again to Rado for sharing his experience with us. Here are a few takeaways I had from our chat. Number one, the key to remote work success is single player mode. Reducing the number of things our teams are dependent on for other people's input increases productivity. That is especially true across remote teams that spread multiple time zones. That creates a lot of asynchronous communication. Latency and decision-making introduces a lot of delay, especially cognitive delay, that emotional momentum you have when you're just really working on a project. Rado and Andreas talk about single-player mode, this idea of optimizing the development experience for no dependencies. You don't have to wait on other people. You can just make decisions and fix them later. Some key enablers for single-player mode on their team are following best practices. And the idea here is written best practices about what decisions you can make and what are the defaults. Solid automated tests so that you can launch confidently. And the Boy Scout rule, which means clean up the trash wherever you see it. That means in the code, in the process, in the documentation. And they also use small checkpoints. If you have small iterations, it's easier to recover if you made a decision that maybe someone else would have had more context for. All of those together enable single player mode and incredible productivity. Number two, to launch more product, we should build an MVP factory. Rado's team differentiates two types of product development projects. One is an MVP, and this is a new initiative, and the other is an existing initiative, and they treat those differently from a planning perspective, from a cadence perspective, from a data perspective. He's found that acknowledging that difference upfront, especially for new engineers, makes a big difference in shifting the mindset. Product Hunt launches these new products constantly, so getting really good at this is important for them. And they also have a focus on reuse. So they're able to extract some services and some libraries, let's say authentication or comments, that they're able to use to accelerate MVP growth. If two different new products need comments, they now have a well-tested library that the team understands. Number three, checklists lead to onboarding success. When you join Rado's team, you're expected to contribute, and these expectations are made clear with an onboarding checklist. This is a written checklist shared between both parties. On the first day, they commit code. Typically, this can just be updating the README. That's okay. Within the first week, they need to be launching a user-facing feature that they can present at an all-team meeting. That demo is really clear, really important. It allows people to celebrate what you're working on. In the first month, they also remove something from the system. So that embeds the cultural idea that we are here to remove things that are not valuable, to remove code, remove old libraries. And there's a more extensive checklist covering all of the things that need to happen as part of developing a new MVP. That way, Rado is certain that a new team member once onboarded has all of the tools they need to be productive in single player mode. Thanks again to Rado for coming on the show. Now I want to hear from you. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. This will help others find our community. Until next week, keep on scaling.